Namaste. So though we had few questions earlier also, but that we will do separately, maybe on Tuesday or something. So I felt this is an interesting and important question which people ask. And the first question is whether we have to join the ashram to do the yoga. And doing mother's work, does it mean doing only work in the ashram? The letter is this idea is based on one of the beautiful, very powerful one-liner of Sri Aurobindo. All work that is done in the ashram is the mother's work. At the same time, there is another letter of Sri Aurobindo where Sri Aurobindo says, such ashrams have always existed since time immemorial and have been there till the master is there, and then they have been, taken off, something like that. Meaning thereby that all these things have to be seen in a certain context. And everything in this life evolves. We should not fix. But first the fundamental. Fundamentals of spirituality is that the divine is within. Even when Sri Aurobindo is in his physical body, there are letters to that effect. He says that there are disciples who are outside. And he says they come and go, receive the touch and the influence and go back. He has used the word charging their batteries. So it is very clear right from the beginning that there are disciples who are here and who are elsewhere. So one thing should be very clear that to do the yoga of Sri Aurobindo, one does not have to be in the Sri Aurobindo ashram, whether here or anywhere else. Then the second part of it is that what about mother's work? Well, any work given anywhere in the world, in fact, any activity of human nature can be turned into the mother's work. And for that, we have to understand what really is mother's work. What is mother's work? It is to create beauty, harmony, light, love, peace. This is the ultimate work. If you see in the Life Divine, the very second paragraph, Sri Aurobindo describes so beautifully what really is divine life. What are we here to do? And he says that right now we have a mind which is always prone to error. And in this error-prone mind, to bring some light of truth. Plenary, supramental illumination. Our heart, which is prone to bitterness, anger, hatred and all the things. To bring there the sweetness of divine love, the joy of love, the divine love. To convert this agitated, anxiety-prone life into a luminous force. And even this body, one day to turn it into a transparent robe of the divine, not the obscure robe that it now is. So again, the work of the mother is primarily inner work. So what is the outer work? Outer work is a means for this work. If we don't understand it and think just by doing an outer work, whether it be in the ashram or in one of the centers or anywhere in the world, that just I am doing outer work and therefore I am doing mother's work, well, we have not got the very first basics. So Sri Aurobindo speaks about work itself in two ways. One is work is not here to show our capacities, to prove something to someone, for ambition, to show off one's talent, etc. That's not the purpose of work. Or to assert one's ego. If these are the ideas which we nurture throughout our life while seemingly doing mother's work, then it's a waste of time. These are facts of spiritual experience. Again, place has its place, but it's not, the real place is inside. Would we say that one has to compulsorily go to Vrindavan to find Krishna? Would one have to say that if you don't go to Vatican, you cannot discover Christ? These are basic facts of spiritual experience, and the yoga is based on this background. To suddenly disconnect it and say, no, only you have to come to a place and then only you can do yoga, it's not correct. Mother says in one of her conversations, for those who may like to go, type the word American youth and you will find it. She says, what is important for yoga is the thirst. Thirst for what? Beyond the human frame, beyond my mind, I may think that my mind, whatever it knows, is ultimate. This is the truth. And all other things that people know is not true. Now, obviously my mind will remain stuck in a certain groove. But when the mind becomes humble, that whatever I may know, how much ever I may know, still there is something which remains unknown. then there is a thirst in the mind for truth, for light, and there is no limit to it. Limitless, infinite. Similarly with my heart, if I am satisfied with the way I am, or my whole nature, if one is satisfied with the way one is within this human frame, then there is no yoga. Yoga begins with thirst for something which exceeds the human frame. And so the mother says, if there is this thirst inside, nothing else matters. And she goes on to say, if you have the thirst, even the extravagances of an American youth are a path. You know what is meant by extravagances of an American youth? You know, these youth people who just go riding on a bike here, there, just they don't know, but they are seeking for something. During that phase, the hippie movement has come. Must remember that. When she is saying this, she had seen that within this movement there is a seed of spiritual awakening. All the systems they had broken down, they were not satisfied. So they started living life with whatever they believed. No, we don't want this. We don't want education. This is how it started. Famous song. We want no education. Imagine that there is a world without boundaries. Now, this awakening happening on the other side of the globe, she says even this is a path. Why? Because there is a thirst for something greater. On the other hand, we may know all the traditions, all the Gitas and Mahabharatas and Ramayana. And we say, well, this is everything. Even if this is everything, realize it. Realize the Krishna inside. What does Sri Aurobindo say? That recover the Vedantic thought, the Aryan thought, the Aryan feeling, not only in thought, in mind, but also in life and action. What is the Aryan way of life? We are very far from it. We know all the Vedantas and give lectures on it. But on the slightest thing, we get angry. We are still turned to selfishness. Even when we go and stand before God, we say this favor, that favor. How far we are from the realizations even of those whose works we have before us. And we close ourselves in a shell. So again, mother's work is inside. Primarily, outer work is a means to discover ourselves. This is the Karma Yoga, which is there in the Gita. But when we do work here or in a center, the advantage is that because the impulsion has been by the divine Shakti directly in her present incarnation. So it is like, you know, there is a very nice saying, Behti Ganga mein haath dhona. The river is flowing by your side, so you just at least wash your hands. So when we join something like that, there is a great advantage. Just like when we come to the ashram, because everything here is meant to support the energies at the ashram, at the samadhi. Basically it is that which supports tremendously the inner life. So it is wonderful. But also it is possible that when we live too close to the Ganges, we take it for granted that because I can wash myself every day, so I have a right to commit all kinds of sins every day. So this is the danger that, you know, because Ganges is very near, we stop valuing it. And I have so many experiences of that kind. Mother herself is recounted. You know, now things are different. See, all institutions have a tendency to get crystallized and hardened. We must understand it. But there was a time, you would be surprised to know, when someone came from Bombay and they would come, people from outside, they would come, they were disciples, they could join the playground, do march past everything and go back. Now even a volunteer can't do it, even though he is an ashram, to be an ashramite. See the difference. And when somebody asked the mother about it, she said, of course, you are much more than anybody else. You think that, you know, many things she said, I don't want to, you know, put words. But she said very clearly, wherever there is a heart which is open to Mother and Sri Aurobindo, we think that she is a slave of, you know, a little space where we will be. No, let us be very clear about these things. Whatever work, wherever we are, any tendency, when we offer it to the divine with sincerity and aspiration that may it be changed, it will happen. The work will be done. And at least like so many mails I receive, I can tell you that it's amazing how the kind of love, the kind of opening that even youngsters have towards the mother and Sri Aurobindo. It's so amazing. Even today I have a mail where an 18-year-old person is asking that, should I marry? Because I want to be single-pointed in my love for the mother. Outside. It's not, the person has come into a framework where you're not supposed to marry. So it is something amazing, and it's not one person. It's happening all over the world. So this we must be very clear. And after supramental manifestation, it is everywhere. Somebody asked the mother that about yoga, world and all. She said, the world is everywhere. The yoga is everywhere. Divine is everywhere. The path is inside us. So if we are sincere, then of course, it's wonderful. Lot of help we may receive, but it can turn the other way. And all this is what she has herself said. She created a space so that we can, all our basic needs are satisfied, so we can turn towards the divine. No, but when basic needs are satisfied, we always want little more. So life outside also the same phenomena applies. So this is one part of it. The second question is about comparisons between people here and outside. This is an unfair comparison. I look at it this way. You know, it's very nice to watch that movie, Uri. Seen the surgical strike? Josh. So if somebody asked you after the movie, how's the Josh? You will say, hi, sir. Isn't it? Try practicing a little bit of that commando trick. Try remaining awake just for 3 days, 3 nights, and traveling with a 10 kilogram bag on your shoulders. Not food, nothing. You have to catch a snake and eat. If possible, maybe live. Try doing it, then you will understand what the movie is about. So while it's all right to appreciate from outside a sadhak, or not to appreciate, even depreciate, but we must be aware that when we take to spiritual life, the forces that start acting upon us are far too intense than the forces that act in ordinary life. Ordinary life act is within a narrow bandwidth. So the possibilities are limited. You know, in Savitri book 1, canto 2, in the issue, we have very nice description. Too high the spiritual fire dare not blaze. If once it touches the original flame, all human measures may be shattered. And then how is human beings trapped? Pain with its whip, joy with its silver bribe, guards the wheels circling immobility within a narrow bandwidth. All life, you'll find very good human beings outside, very well behaved, much better behaved. But we must understand that humanity has not yet opened to the vastnesses and heights of the spirit. And I'm not talking of everybody, just because everybody may live in a place, may not. But if you take to yoga, there are cosmic forces. How Sri Aurobindo describes in the Vedas, the preface, that how the ancient rishis saw the soul of man as a world full of battles where gods and the titans clash. You know, you read it outside, but when the battle is inside, it's not an easy task. When we are far from the sun, somebody used to say very nicely, Chhote Narayan ji, Suraj se dur hote na, when you are far from the sun, you appreciate, oh nice cold season, so nice warmth of the sun. Try going near. This is the central focus of the Havan Kund. If you come near, it's a fire that will burn. And when it burns, we don't know what the reactions will be. That's why the mother said, it is the great adventure. She even uses the word which can frighten people. I don't know what is going to happen to you. The mother's word when she describes the supreme adventure. Because when you come close to the Yajnavedi, you are sitting next to the fire. You can be scorched. And this is the chance that a sadhak takes. I'm talking of a genuine sadhak. Sadhak has nothing to do by the way of being in one place or another place. When you undertake to spiritual life, it's a supreme adventure. You are trying to scale Mount Everest and not just watch a video film on that. And when you try it, you may fall. And when you fall, you may hurt. That's why repeatedly Sri Aurobindo cautions, from the very beginning, let the mother hold you. Lean on grace. Lean, practice surrender. Why? Because he knows these things will happen. So if you have not practiced surrender and leaning on grace, when there is a, you know, something happens like that, then it can shatter us. But if we have leaned on grace from the very beginning, practiced surrender, kept on offering, then the divine walks with us. So they are not comparable, a life of yoga which somebody takes and a normal life which moves in a narrow bandwidth. So then, is there no value of normal life? No, it's of great value. Everything in life has a value. In normal life, we have to do a lot of sacrifice. But unfortunately, we are sacrificing it to limited gods. A lady spends all her life sacrificing for husband and child. Husband spends all his sacrifice to earn money and probably provide. What is the end result of all this? Even if everything goes wonderful, what we will receive? We'll have a nice house, maybe a little vehicle, and the child will study and become whatever you want to become. And then old age, you have to survive. So one is sacrificing so much. Sacrifice is not the waste. It is preparing our nature to learn to sacrifice, to learn to accept, to take the challenge of life. That's why when people take the challenge of life, it's a very good preparation for yoga. Shobhinda speaks of that in Essays on the Gita. On the other hand, compare a situation, a youngster comes and starts living in the ashram, 18, 19, 20. He has not faced the challenge of life. God is right there, but he cannot receive it. Why? Because one has not gone through the challenges of life. And Shobhinda says that's why in the beginning, early years, Shobhinda would normally accept people only in their mid-30s. You'll see most of the sadhaks. It was not like 19, 20, 21, you come and you are good at work, okay, healthy, you have come from somewhere, you are this, that, you can speak this language, all this, so you are accepted. It was not like that, because he said, you must have some experience of life, because it's the best preparation for yoga. People who don't have experience of life, they are not ready for yoga, unless you are a Shukdev. Shukdev is a rare example. Most people need to go through to take the challenges. In fact, Mother says, if you cannot take the challenge of outer life, how will you take the much greater challenge of inner life? So definitely outer life is a tremendous preparation, but to waste a whole lifetime in outer life is, worldly life is also not a very rational thing. So while one goes through it, knows it, sees it beyond a point, let the turning come and continue with inner life. Now this will become slowly secondary. Preparation is over. You don't prepare all your life only doing that whole stuff. So in most human beings, by their late 30s or early 40s, an awakening does come. Those who are marked for spiritual life. Those who are not marked is a different category. They are happy within their limited frame, and let them remain happy. Don't disturb them. But in most human beings, by the time they are, late 30s to mid 40s, you'll see that some kind of a churning starts, and they want to seek something greater and higher, and they must follow that. It doesn't matter where they are living. They may be living far away and all that. So we have to understand that yes, experience of life is very important. It's a yagna, but one should also understand that whatever, this is a human frame, and in human frame you will get only human things. If you go to a shop which is selling artificial jewelry and you tell them, no, I want pure gold, so either he will cheat you or he will say, go to a higher shop. So you'll ask, you will go to a higher shop, better shop, proper. I don't want to name any jeweler because no advertisements. I don't even know who is a good one. But anyways, so you go to a better shop, good quality shop. So when you go there, so what will he say? You want good gold? Okay, sir, I have pure gold, hallmark. So you will ask, how much is it? He'll say, this is this much per gram, whatever is the cost. What is the cost per gram? Anyways, 4,000, 3,000, something like that, no? Whatever. So you say roughly, arbitrarily, 4,000 per gram or 40,000 per gram, maybe I'm maybe mistaken. So you say that cost. You say, it is too expensive. That other fellow was selling me for 1,000 rupees. He was giving me a whole ring. So what will he say? Then go back. You are not ready to pay the price. So this is how it works. If you want to go for a spiritual life, you are basically wanting the pure diamond. You are not satisfied with less than that. Now, if you want pure diamond, you may not be able to pay the price. Go back, earn, and come back. So ordinary life then becomes a preparation to, by earning I mean, have the strength that one day you may say, take my ego self, mother, here I keep my head at your feet. Take it. What you do with me is your lookout. I want to surrender myself. So life is a preparation for yoga, and yoga is a means to fulfill life. So it's ordinary life is a means to prepare for the yogic life. And yogic life is a means to fulfill ordinary life. All that we are seeking in ordinary life, you cannot find within that frame. That's why it says subconscious yoga. Still we are seeking the right thing, but in the wrong place. We want pure gold, but we want in a, you know, imitation jewelry shop. And we are not ready to pay the price. So if you are not ready to pay the price, understand that I am not ready to pay the price. But pray, aspire, one day one is ready to pay the price. But after that, what happens is, when you get pure gold, to keep it safe is very difficult. Then the problem, another kind of problem starts. When you're wearing imitation jewelry, no, you don't mind if somebody appreciates or doesn't appreciate. You take it out and keep it outside. And if it's vanished, what do you say? Ah, it's okay, it was just worth 500 rupees. You buy a pure jewelry, wear it. Now another kind of problem starts. How to keep it safe? Robbers start eyeing you. Oh, and if the jewel is even more precious, if it's a small little ring, it's okay. But if you have been able to pay the price and the divine has granted you a crown, now what happens? You step out of the shop and see what happens. Get into the market and see what happens. You will be surrounded by robbers who will come in disguise. Nice. They will come. So, sir, how are you? But eyes on the crown, how to snatch it? Okay, so it is far more difficult to keep the grace of the Divine Mother, Sri Aurobindo's words, than to keep Kubera's treasures. So that's why one has to be ready. One has to value it. If you don't value it, just wear it like that casually and think puffed up, oh, I have a crown. So some thief will naturally take away, because we are showing off that I have a crown, you see. I have a crown. So one of them will say, let me see. So he will see and then he will run away and you will wonder. So there are two different things. Ordinary life, the life of samsara, is a preparation for spiritual life. Between the ordinary life and the spiritual life, there is something called as a religious or moral life. So Sri Aurobindo speaks of that there are three kinds of life. The ordinary life, which is centered around the ego and our selfish satisfaction. This is the ordinary life. The religious life or moral life is also centered around that, but with a little twist and turn. You believe in the beyond, but for your own sake. Mother, I pray for my child. Mother, I pray for my wealth. Mother, I pray for my husband. This is still religious life, even though we are turning to mother. We are invoking her presence in a religious sense, and she will come like four kinds of bhaktas. Mother, I want more wealth. Mother, I want a promotion. Mother, this should go well, that should go well. Religious life or a moral life, which we lead by certain principles. We don't believe in God, by certain principles. Still, we want ours. I earn honest salary and I pay all my taxes. This is a typical moral man. And he thinks he is a spiritual being. He's a moral man. I pay all my taxes, do this, don't do this, do's and don't. But when you take to spiritual life, all these frames crash. Because it's not about any of the frames. It's freedom, infinity. The freedom and infinity of the divine. So this is a preparation for that other life. This is how we should look at these two aspects. And we don't know who is going through what. This is the other. So we should not judge. There are beautiful people going through ordinary life, taking it as a challenge, even doing yoga, and they are much more worthy of salutation, honestly, than somebody who may be in Vatican, but very far from Christ. Because he thinks I am the next pope to be. His eye is on becoming a cardinal rather than on loving Christ. So that is another kind of humanity. We need not. So one may be in a space and yet be full of ambition, fears, anxieties. It's a different thing altogether. But I am talking of genuine sadhana. If somebody in outside life is practicing yoga, at least for myself, I would do naman and salute the person, because in such circumstances one is doing yoga. Then when everything is provided for and yet one is not able to do it, it's a big loss, because it's a unique opportunity. Imagine when you have an opportunity and don't do it, what a big loss it is. But that's one part. And a third question, which is a final question, what we are doing for the world? Somebody has asked this question. What are we doing for the world? I have paradoxical answers. Why should anybody do anything for the world? As if outside everybody is doing for the world. Somebody has sent me somebody else's question. If the person was present and asked me, what are people in the ashram doing for the world? I would have asked the person, what are you doing for the world? You're doing a job, earning money. What are you doing for the world? leading a selfish life like anybody else. How many people really do something for the world, for humanity? People ask in the ashram what you are doing for the world. What are you doing outside? Even people in a certain job. I mean, I'm barring people who sacrifice their life like military, which is giving their life and no amount of money can compensate for that. But otherwise, whether it's business or whether it's, you know, you are in this job, that job, you are leading life for selfish purposes. When you get the money, what do you do with it? You look after your children, put it into bank balance. What are you really giving to the world? Okay, if you say no, but I am working. So here also one is working. Here one is giving. One is creating so many things, beautiful things. Imagine when a person walks into the ashram. I take this example. Often people ask, what does the ashram need money for? So I give this example. Leave aside that the sadhaks and all that, whether they are sadhaks, not sadhaks, forget that. People come, why they come? Not because of sadhaks, they come drawn by Mother and Sri Aurobindo. And when they come, they are ushered into the ashram at the samadhi. Now, just to keep the samadhi clean, lovely flowers, which we all appreciate, keep the surroundings clean, people who are waiting there, who have to take you, Sri Aurobindo's room, books are there, which inspire people and you go back, cards, message cards are printed, and obviously there will be some people who will look after. They may be sadhaks or they may be paid people. Either ways, you need money for all this. I am giving a very, very simple thing. So even though people go back inspired, obviously, because of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, is this inspiration of no value? And if they are getting inspired, behind there is a whole backbone structure. And I take this example of military. So in the Air Force, I was a doctor, medical doctor, and we have the fighter pilots who are, you know, every day going zoom, zoom in the air and coming back and night sorties and everything is wonderful. You know, one of the pilots once remarked, and quite a few pilots have said that, but one I remember very consciously. He said, you know, Doc, we are so comfortable because you are here. We know if something happens to us, our family will be looked after. This is the backbone. Nobody knows. Okay, doctors are still people who are respected. But this is a backbone in an organization. So we may not be doing something very directly for the world, but the light that is going from the ashram, don't we value it? The world is looking towards something which can give them direction, hope. And that something, just giving that, just the books. You walk into Shabda. Who is printing the books? Paper is there, everything is there. All this needs money. It's not like, you know, it will magically it will come. So there is a direct contribution to the world, which also people in the ashram have done. But of course, like in the world, it's very rare. Very few people know, for example, that the solar project, which now it's all solar. The ashram is the pioneer. Chaman Lalji, I mean, how beautiful work. Organics, now everybody talks about organics. The ashram has been into organic farming since God knows when. One of the first farming. Interpersonal relationships. Even the fact that every human being has a beautiful aspiration, tries to control and master oneself. Mother says, your little victory will have an impact upon the world. So every little effort that one human being does anywhere, this is known as the 100th mice principle or whatever. In coronavirus, we talk about herd immunity. Something very similar. That if we win our little victory inside over our egoism, it has an impact on the whole world. There is a very beautiful writing of Sri Aurobindo, of Nalnida. Mother has spoken of it, but Sri Aurobindo also, but Nalnida's writing. The ashram, the world, the individual. And he says, whatever we do in the ashram, it has an impact upon the world. And we have to be very careful. If within ashram we are full of fear, world will be full of fear. Take it for granted. Because it is the way, this is the laboratory of the divine. What is coming out here will go everywhere. So if there is a human being in ashram who is full of faith, it will multiply 10,000 times and spread into the world. Simply because it's an indirect occult action. We are all connected. This is the basic teaching of even modern science. We are not an island. So what happens inside us has a repercussion. Both good and bad, whatever way. So it is not in simple work to work upon one's nature. what is being done outside worked upon outer nature. What is being worked here? Upon one's own inner nature. Is it something like a joke? What is being given outside? Food. Physical food. Physical shelter. This is what is being worked, no? Ultimately. Physical protection. And what is the food that is being given by the ashram? Somebody who values spiritual food. Human beings are dying because of lack of spiritual food. What is spiritual food? Faith, love, light. They don't have it. Outside you have a lot of money, you can buy everything. But where will you get spiritual food? So it is a place where spiritual food is being given. Is it of no value? It nourishes the soul. Is the soul of no value? Then again, what is being given from here? All these things which outside you will not find. One can buy things with money. There are things one cannot buy from money. And that is being given here. Of course, like outside, there are different people in different stages. There are some people who are in the forefront of the human march who will be noticeable. But it doesn't mean that the people who are behind are not working. Similarly, in the ashram, there will be people in the forefront. Like when Amal Kiran wrote so many books and he wrote about Vedic civilization, Aryan civilization. It's a new thought idea which has gone into the world. Or people who are releasing new ideas about concepts about health. Recently, sometime back, someone told me, you know, this article, have you read? What is it? So latest research on health. I have forgotten also now. But that time I said, yes, yes, when we had conceived Namaha in 1995, we had written something like this. 1995. And this 1 year back or 6 months back, somebody was saying, you know, people are thinking like this. So, releasing idea forces into this world, is it of no value? The world is deprived because of that. It's hungry for that. So, there are different kinds of work which people need, different kinds of gifts people need. Material gifts are only one of them. There are gifts which are material which some people can give and they should give. Though outside most people are only earning for themselves, amassing their bank balance. Let's be very clear. Let's not be fooled as if outside everybody is a paragon of charity and, you know, giving to the world. They are giving to their relatives and family. Let's be very clear on that. Or sometimes they give charity. Why? Because I will have a seat in heaven. So, it's no good. Selfishness is everywhere. It's a universal problem. It's not only here, it's everywhere you will find selfish people are selfish people. Still, even they do some good, indirectly. Because the framework of life demands that you cannot. A doctor who may be living only to earn money still does some good. Isn't it? When he sees a patient and, you know, helps out. It's like that outside people do. Like that here also you will find. This one part of it. But the ultimate good, what is that ultimate good? Is to go beyond the human frame and divinize life. This is a laboratory for that. We must not forget that if it happens here, the best conditions are here. It can happen anywhere. But if it can happen in few human beings, it is enough for the whole balance to be tilted and humanity takes the leap. When Neanderthals were fighting against Homo sapiens sapiens, read about this theory, why Neanderthals lost. Poor fellows, they were more compassionate, more intelligent. Homo sapiens were cunning people. Neanderthals lost, finished, wiped out, extinction. But did they die? Now they are re-emerging in human heart. When human beings say, no, we should be more cooperative than competitive. So that we don't even know 1 lakh years, 2 lakh years, when it happened. So similarly, when we aspire, in some pockets, people are aspiring for a higher life, for a greater life, for a better way, wherever they may be. They are the pioneers. They are not seen outside. They may not be in their jobs earning money, or in their jobs they may be earning money. Doesn't matter. But by their very fact that they are aspiring, they are opening a door and helping others. Ask any, you know, this question. Ask any, in India when people ask, it's really beyond comprehension. Ask any spiritual master, what are you doing for the world? What will he say? I give moksha, freedom. Do we not value it? I'm talking of the traditional guru. Is a spiritual master supposed to give you food to eat and have you know, all kinds of things that anybody can give. But when a master, you go to a great master and he says, I'll give you freedom from ignorance. Is it something small? That is his gift to the world. So there are material gifts, there are intellectual gifts, and there are spiritual gifts. So this is a place where what is given to the world and what is done to the world is something spiritual. And if we value it, we'll find it and see it and feel grateful. And if we don't value it, then the rest of the world is there with all its usual selfishness. Even if you do good to the world, it is the same dense ignorance. People feed the poor and only make them feel worse. Because if you feed them once in a week halwa puri, 6 days their fellows are miserable. Isn't it? You give them, so that's why if you take to feeding somebody, make sure you take the whole burden. Don't do this 1 week, I give some money in a mandir and they will feed one day. It's worse situation. And if you give a pair of clothes, make sure that you replenish it every time the clothes are torn. How can you just give one and feel very great about I am doing something for the world? It's worse. Because you have made the person used to now a way of living. He was very comfortable and happy. Now you have made him used to. Now you better do. Or better still, if you can, don't give clothes. Give a job. So there are some who give a job of this kind. There are others who give another kind of job. And the job is to work upon one's own nature and arrive at fullness, mastery, and the fullness of the divine consciousness. So this is what ashram, and in fact all, not only ashram, wherever, system of education, I forgot to say. It completely new. Just imagine in 40s. What did the mothers, when the school was started? Can you imagine a school where no money is charged from a student, however rich you may be, and no salary is paid to the teacher? And you know the reason? It's not because it's a rich ashram. When mother was asked, what did she say? She said that my child, education was never sold in India. Knowledge was never sold. Ancient India. That's why you had the concept of Guru Dakshina. You know why? Because knowledge, you cannot put a price tag on knowledge. I am a teacher. I want this money. No. You have diminished knowledge. You have disrespected knowledge. Knowledge cannot be sold. You cannot put a price tag. That's why there was Guru Dakshina. There was nothing else. Because you cannot really give it back. So, can you imagine a new kind of way of system of education? It's not a system, but something far beyond. So, is it not worth emulating? So, in every sphere, we will see that there is something. Women empowerment. Which is the pioneer? Ashram. It is an example, benchmark. How women should be. How men and women should be equal in sharing all the responsibilities of life. In our dining room, is it only girls who are cooking? Both girls and boys. In the playground, is it only boys? No, both girls and boys. What is it but an example, trendsetter for the future life? If we value these things, then we can say that the ashram is the beacon light spearheading the march of humanity. And we can take that example and in our own little way, start emulating it, because anyways, the spirit of time is in that direction. Whatever direction that Mother and Sri Aurobindo have given to life, that is how it is going to be. We may like it or not like it is our problem. That is the Yuga Dharma of the coming age, that men and women will be equal in every way. So all these things, equality of men and women, another beautiful example. We sit in dining room, we sit on the same table and chair and eat, isn't it? Have you ever asked what caste you belong to? I'm a Brahmin, I will sit there. Try saying this in the ashram, dining room. They will say, Brahmin. Kaga Brahmin. Mother made it simple. All my children are Brahmins, meaning thereby seekers of knowledge. You have a silence room. But you don't have a room for Brahmins and another for outcast. Do we ask your profession? Do we judge people seeing the dress? Oh, he must be a big man. See his dress. Is coming out of a car. I remember a story in International Guest House. There was a man sitting like watchman on the, not gate, but just out. Now they have changed the reception, but that time, you know, I think Ratan Lal ji was there, old man. So outside somebody was sitting casually in a banyan and shorts, the way you know ashram people. And one visitor thought he is some watchman. And the way, unfortunately, you should speak nicely to everybody, but very rudely. Ah, hey, batao, kidhar, tumhara malik kahan hai? Achha, he is telling, explaining. Till he came to know that he was a retired judge. Here we don't judge people based on their appearances. Is it not a beautiful example? At least till now, what may happen in future is different. But it's a beautiful example. It's something to be emulated outside. We sit together and eat in a common place without this thought that you are high, low, I am rich, poor, this caste, that caste, man, woman. Amazing. I have seen traditional houses, woman will serve, she will wait, last lady to eat jhutan, whatever is left. If nothing is left, no choice. Actually, it has happened that nothing much was left and lady had to go half hungry. Why? Because she gave to them. They have done this sacrifice. All this she has removed. Mother has removed. And ashram is a ideal. One of the things that had struck me here. Imagine what a role model. You walk into the ashram, you are going to samadhi. Ever noticed any panda saying, you give me so much money, then only you can go near? Is it not an example worth emulating? That you can go to God straight. There is no priest, padri, panda, malvi in between. You just walk to the samadhi and bow down. No rituals, up to you. It's an amazing example. So there are beautiful things for those who want to see, which are like standard. Most people here use cycle. Now, isn't it like another example? Okay, I'm not saying ki you should become like go green and you know, don't become a fundamentalist. There are all kinds of fundamentalists, huh? Rigid mindset. But the point is that look at, you know, the emphasis on physical education. All these things are ideal for humanity to follow. It's a wonderful gift. So people, if they can't see, you see, you can't make the blind see. But surely when someone asked me this question that somebody has sent, I wish the person was there, I would have just finished in one sentence. What are you doing for the world, mister? That you ask somebody what they are doing for the world. The only question we should ask is, what am I giving to this world? All that I have received, all of us have received, whether it be intellectual capacity, this, that, everything is a gift of grace of Mother Nature if you don't believe in the divine. And we must give it back. But here we don't give it to the world, we give it to the guardian of the world, the divine, and tell him you distribute it the way you want it. Isn't it much better than just randomly giving it to the world? What we do is we offer our work to the divine. So the divine takes all these energies. Now what he will do? He will decide whom to give, what to give. Which is far more better and beautiful thing. That's why when you have, you know, a common fund which is managed by an honest person, you would prefer to give it there or you want to give it, you know, sometimes you see people with that little gulag standing on the way. What is this flood relief fund? Would you feel comfortable putting it there? Because you don't know where it will go. But if you have like, you know, our Honorable Chowkidar ji, present Prime Minister, definitely one can completely trust that yes, if I give my money, at least we know that it will not be misused. So when we give to the divine, what are we doing really? We are giving it to divine. It's a yagna. We are not asking back. It's up to the divine what he will give us, what he will give somebody else, whether it be thought, feelings, everything. We leave ourselves to him and he decides where to give, what to give. So giving to the divine is the biggest kind of giving. Otherwise we will give in the world but ignorantly, create more confusion and more imbalance. And Lord, like everybody gives to the family saying that it is my dharma and duty. And what people do? All kinds of imbalances. So when we give to the divine and the divine gives, this is the ancient meaning of the word yagna. You see, when you go to a yagna, everybody gives. Somebody gives some money, somebody some gritam, you know, ghee, somebody gives wood, all this happens. So there is yagya which goes on. Then what happens after that? Yaprasad. Now everybody gets prasad. So this is a giving to the world ignorantly is not the way. Give to the world yagna. And whom do you give for the world yagna? You have the priest of the sacrifice. Him you give. You don't give to, say, when the yagna is going on, nobody takes out one bottle of butter and says, okay, I am also putting little in it. That'll create chaos. You give to the yagna by giving it to the priest of the sacrifice. So the divine is the priest of this world sacrifice. And when we give to him, we let him give to whomever he wants and whichever way he wants. This is the way of life that one learns when one takes to the path of yoga. Okay. Thank you. Namaste.